This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. WynnBET is now live in Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, and Arizona. From boosted parlays to in-game odds on every major sport, WynnBET has what you need to win. Sign up today to receive a $1,000 risk-free sports bet. Download the WynnBET app now or visit WynnBET.com and start winning today. We're also brought to you by PropSwap, America's marketplace to buy and sell sports bets. Use promo code SGP on your first deposit to receive up to $500 in bonus cash. Head on over to PropSwap.com or download the PropSwap app today. And next, we're brought to you by Better Fantasy. Better Fantasy is a free-to-play app that allows you to bet on all your favorite NFL player props for a chance to win awesome prizes. Download the app today over at BetterFantasy.com/SGPN. That's B-E-T-T-O-R Fantasy.com/SGPN. And finally, we're brought to you by SoBet. Sign up to bet against your friends and join the social betting revolution at SoBet.io/SGPN. That's SoBet.io/SGPN. And of course, don't forget to download the SGPN app. It's your home for all of our free picks and podcasts right there in the palm of your hand. Download the SGPN app wherever it is you download apps.
Howdy ho, Degenerinos, and welcome to the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, episode 109. Goes out to the Beatles, number nine. My millennial co-host has no idea what I'm talking about, but some of you old heads may know. Thanks for coming to the podcast. Hi, how are you? I would be your host, Jeff Fox. You may know me from such places as the sportsgamblingpodcast.com, where I edit and write, and my MMA site, MMA-manifesto.com. where you all should head over and at the very least enter our pick 'em contest that we have running for the big pay-per-view that we're going to cover this episode of this here podcast, the MMA Gambling Podcast. And if you're listening to us on our feed, MMA Gambling Podcast feed, thank you. That way, it's a win-win for both of us. It gets our numbers up and you get the podcast earlier than you do on the main SGPN feed. So win-win. And heck, if you like what we're doing, give us a review and a rating. It helps keep the lights on in the MMA Gambling Podcast studios. We have two studios also. We're international. Because the other studio, this studio I'm speaking to you right now, is from the freezing cold winter wonderland of Canada. My associate co-host, he's probably in winter wonderland too, because he's not too far down south, but he's across the border from me. What can I tell you about him? I think I named him the grumpiest youngest old man. I don't know, something like that. He's a grumpy young guy. He's the guy, if you've listened to the podcast before, he's the guy who no-sells all of my amazing jokes. Apparently he has no humor or doesn't know a good joke when one smacks him in the face. But he's sometimes good at making picks if it's not UFC. This week it is UFC, so just remember that this is Jeff's voice. I'm the one who hits at least 60% of my picks. And the other voice you're going to hear is the guy who struggles to hit half of his picks and loses all his money and his family's going to be out in the street. His name's Daniel Gumby-Vreeland. Let's hear that voice.
So first of all,
you always have an agenda. Agenda.
Well, because usually you introduce me with seven different things, so I got to respond to at least a couple of them. I do get the number nine reference. However, I'm not a big Beatles guy. But I will say the only reason I know the number nine reference is because in an episode of The Simpsons, Barney does a spinoff of that where the girl he's dating at the time says number eight and he belches in between every time she says number eight, which I think is it the B Sharps episode? Do you have any idea what I'm talking about? Am I just speaking into the void here?
Yes, that is correct. I'm very impressed. First of all, that it's the Simpsons reference, of course, and that you actually knew what it was. And yes, that is the the B-Sharps episode. Do you know why the name B-Sharp is funny, Dan, musically?
Yeah, it's because it's a note, right?
It's correct? Not a note. That's why it's funny. B-Sharp does not exist. That's why
it's funny. Oh, hey. Yeah, no, I didn't know that. I'm not musically inclined, which is probably why I said before that I'm not a huge Beatles guy.
B's and E's do not have a sharp, just so you know. The rest of them do. So there you go. Now you learn something.
Look at that.
Now you learn something.
We learn something every episode here on the Gambling Podcast.
We do. Let me think. Is there any newsworthy items that we should speak of? Anybody having a nasty divorce in the press or through Twitter that we haven't discussed yet?
The Nate Diaz, Dustin Poirier saga kind of beats on. It seems like there's a new development every day that's not actually a development. Both of them continuously say they want that fight, but something seems to be hindering it. I can't imagine it's the UFC though, right? Like it's got to be money on one of their sides, because the UFC I know would make that a co-main event, and it would be great for that Colby Masvidal pay-per-view. There's got to be something stopping it though. So Nate's got to be demanding big money, or Poirier's got to be demanding it's at 155 pounds. Like, there's got to be some sort of claim on one fighter's side.
Yeah, it's always comes down to money. If you ever, anything in life, if you, a question why anything in life is occurring or not occurring, then money's usually the answer. So I'm guessing it's the money issue. You probably would guess it would be Diaz's end, since they seem to be difficult to negotiate with. Not that it's their fault. They probably just want to be paid what they deserve to be paid. But UFC seems to have trouble dealing with the Diazes in general. So that would be my guess. But yeah, it slots in perfectly at that pay-per-view. So you'd think they would. Well, actually, like I said before, their money is already in their coffers for their pay-per-view. So there's not a huge benefit to them to spend a lot of money on these pay-per-views, because I guess they get paid extra if it sells a lot, but regardless, their money is already accounted for from ESPN Plus. So, but yeah, it's got to be a money issue.
Yeah, but apart from that, I mean, we're getting the same four Francis Ngannou articles on repeat, and we're just waiting for fights to happen.
Yep. Apparently Leon Edwards is getting the next title shot, which is a bit of a surprise. Dana White, actually, he must really be desperate.
I mean, I've heard that once or twice before. So I'll believe it when he's got.
Have we really heard that?
I think I've heard that. So I'll believe it when they're in the cage together. When Kamaru Usman is in the cage with Leon Edwards, I'll believe it.
All right. Well, the odds are out, Dan. What do you think the odds are?
On that fight, it should be Usman -220.
Open at 280, and then I got an email earlier today. It was -260.
Okay.
Plus 220 for Edwards, so it's 72% probability that Usman wins. So probably a little low. When you break it down to percentage, a lot of times it's like, oh yeah, actually, I don't see Edwards beating him. What if they fought 10? I don't see him beating him three times.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. I think Usman's going to crush him, but I do think he's one of the better contenders for Usman. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Because he's got like a weird enough style where he can stuff some takedowns, and he's kind of good on the feet. So, you know, like he's better at stuffing takedowns than Jorge Masvidal is. And he's, I wouldn't say better on the feet than Colby Covington, but probably more dangerous than Colby Covington, who's just like a volume puncher.
Right. Yep, very true. We were talking about drug test failures a few weeks back and how we don't get them anymore, but we had two come down in the past couple of days, so that's something. One of them is Carlos Felipe, which is kind of surprising.
Yeah, it's very surprising.
He's a big old boy, and not big as in PED looking big. He's just a big boy. What did he get popped for? Did you see?
I don't know, but this is his second time, too.
It's a huge surprise, though, he says, Dan. I'm looking at the article now.
It's not a huge surprise. If you get popped the first time, the likelihood of you getting popped the second time is pretty high. So, yeah, I wouldn't say that I'm going to be, if they do release him, because I sort of think they're going to. If they do release him, I don't think I'd be super sad to see him go. As good as his record was, he wasn't super exciting to watch, right? Like, he gave you the type of heavyweight fight you hate to watch.
Yeah. It was for an anabolic agent, so go figure.
Yeah, you wouldn't guess that with him. That's probably bad.
And he lost. And he lost Arlovsky.
Yeah, he lost my boy.
Boy, oh boy, boy. The one positive about these things is they always find them 15% of their purse, so I can figure out fighters' purses this way, since Vegas doesn't release purse numbers. But they tell you how much a person's been fined. I can figure out Carlos Felipe's purse now, because I know 15% of his purse was $4,200. So there you go. I won't do the math over air like we usually like to do, but that's one positive. Then what, Zviad, is that how you say his name? Zviad Lavishvili. I remember saying his name before. He got popped too for 9 months for a failed drug test. So good way to make your UFC debut.
I would say so. Yeah, that's exactly what you want in your debut.
Yep. What did he, anti-estrogen. That's what he had on. So you use that stuff to, hide. I can't remember if that's to, I think I still level out your numbers, because he obviously was doing anabolic stuff and then he's trying to, I don't know. I don't juice. So I'm not sure.
you're above your pay grade on this one.
Yeah, above my pay grade. And Dan definitely doesn't. He would be nicknamed Gumby if he was a juice head, would you?
No, I'm definitely not buff enough to be a juicer. Although then again, Carlos Felipe was, so who's to say?
Yeah, no, exactly. You could never guess. The smell test is not, or the eye test is not, does not work with that guy. I don't think there's anything else important that's going on, is there, Dan?
Let's get to the good stuff.
Well, we have some good stuff. First, I'll tell you about a good sponsor of ours, WynnBET. Ready to win money and boost your odds, WynnBET is now live in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. We're bringing the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas to online sports betting casino play. Exclusive rewards right at your fingertips. Get in all your favorite teams, players, and sports from NFL, NBA, MLB, NHL, golf, MMA, WNBA, college football, and more. Plus, WynnBET has some brand new bonuses we've been telling you about. Bet $5. Win $400 in free bets, plus another new thing for you. Be sure to check out all WynnBET's Build Your Own Bet boosted same game parlays headed into the NFL divisional round weekend, which the Cowboys won't begin, sadly. Most boosts fall between 10 to 15% of the original price. Plus, it's fun to say WynnBET's Build Your Own Bet boosted is a fun thing to say. So make sure you check all that out before this weekend's divisional round games. They got great promos, odds, and payouts are happening right now over at WynnBET for boosted parlays to live in-game odds in every major sport. They have what you need to win. Ready to play? Sign up today to receive a special offer, risk-free $1,000 sports bet. Bet big, win bigger at WynnBET. Download the WynnBET app now or visit wynnbet.com. We are also brought to you by the Mighty Prop Swap, where America buys and sells sports bets. The NFL playoffs are in full swing and prop swappers are cashing in. Like Will from Arizona, who on Sunday night sold his $50, 100-1, 49ers Super Bowl ticket for $500 on Prop Swap. Will locked in his profit when he turned his $50 bet into $500. The buyer got great odds, and the seller made 10 times his bet. Prop Swap has thousands of buyers across the country, so you always find the best odds and collect the most money for your bets. Hurry and download the app, free Prop Swap app today. Prop Swap has fantastic features like filtering listed tickets based on the best value, a free activity feed to stay in the know with all the big sales and red hot tickets for sale, a loyalty rewards program that turns your ticket sales into extra bonus cash, and a first deposit cash match. Use promo code SGP on your first deposit and PropSwap will match your deposit up to $500. That's so nice of them. Join the real sports bettors on PropSwap, where America buys and sells sports bets. All right, that fun stuff's out of the way. Let's get down to the other fun stuff, which is the first UFC pay-per-view of 2022. Do you realize after this we have a week off again, Dan? That we have
I
to
did.
Come up
yeah,
with?
I just There's realized Bellator, that as I was planning my episodes for my other podcast.
You're not. Go ahead.
It's Top Say Turtle MMA podcast. Yeah, and I realized, oh crap, I'm gonna need like a whole bunch of interview fillers here because nobody will be fighting that week. So, yep, that's something I did.
There's a big Bellator though. That weekend, so maybe we'll for our listeners on this year podcast, maybe we'll we'll try our hand at some Bellator bets.
We could also definitely look into interesting fight card with Eagle FC, the Khabib Nurmagomedov owned promotion.
Right.
Yeah, they put together their first US based card, and it is it's pretty impressive. I think they've got some really big names on it. There's Ray Borg is fighting on it. John Doomsday Howard's fighting on it. Tyrone Spong is fighting on it. Sergey Karatanov is fighting on it. Like, there's a lot of good names on that fight card. Oh, Jorgen De Castro's on it. Like, it's it's basically like 5 years ago's a fight night card.
Right. Is this the one that Rashad Evans is on or not?
Oh yeah, Rashad Evans.
Not that we want to see him back. He's
fighting Gabriel Checho, which, by the way, is maybe a semi-winnable fight. I think I only saw him as like a +200 dog, which tells you know what the books think of Checho. But we should probably dig into that.
All right, well, there you go, people. Just we like to do all our business on air. Everything, there is no curtains here. We're all the same, so you get to be in and on the planning too, which I know is thrilling for all of you MMA gambling podcast heads out there. All right, let's get down to this weekend where we actually do have a pay-per-view. Like I said, the first pay-per-view of the year, and it's actually, they're on the move. The Octagon is on the move. Anaheim, California, at the Honda Center is where this one will be going down. California is actually a state that releases fighter purse info, so I will have the official purse info as soon as I get it from the California State Athletic Association over on MMA-manifesto.com. But we're going to talk about some gambling here. Thoughts on the card overall, the strength of it, your interest in it, that type of thing.
I will say this. I think being somebody who was like heavily into the Contender Series last year, it's really interesting for that reason, because there's a whole bunch of people who we saw in the Contender Series who are going to get to see debut for the very first time. So I think it's interesting for that. I actually think the prelims are a lot better than the main card. For a pay-per-view card, this one's kind of weak. The two title fights are great. The other three fights on the main card are kind of so-so. I'm not even really excited for most of those. I mean, I like Rodolfo Vieira, but I think the style matchups and the prelims are really exciting.
No, it's true. Yeah. And it shows how shot my brain is that these Contender Series people, I know them all, but I can't remember anything about them, which is great. Really, really great for making picks. I'm like, okay, I know this person. Now what happened in their fight? I'm going to start taking notes, I think. Well, I guess that's what Dan's here for. He jogs my memory on these things. But as to the strength of the main card, it's usually you have at least one or two other fights. Sometimes all if you have two title fights, usually a lot of times the other three fights on the main card are all like fight night headliner worthy, but you have none on this card. Unfortunately, interesting names, but it is very top heavy. And then the rest of the card is kind of Well, it's like I said, interesting matchups, not big names is pretty much what we're getting into. So, all right. So since this is a pay-per-view, we got is it 6 or 6:30 start time? Let me go to MMA Manifesto and find out.
It's 6 o'clock.
Is it 6 o'clock? Okay. And it's going to be on the UFC Fight Pass for the prelims, or in Canada, usually an hour in. Well, we miss the first hour always of these things. And then it is on TSN usually at 7 o'clock. So it would be 7 o'clock. And then if you're listening in Canada, that is. And then the main prelim portion of the night is at 8 o'clock PM Eastern. And that is on ESPN2 and ESPN+. And then the main card, 10 PM Eastern, pay-per-view. Pay-per-view is still a thing. Actually, it's pretty much North America, I think, is the only place where they sell pay-per-views now, or at least in Europe, they all get it for free through their sports providers, I think. Good deal.
Yeah, great for the people here in North America still paying.
Time to move. Time to move, Dan. Are you full of snow like we are here? I forgot to ask you that.
Not really.
We got nailed.
It leveled out. We got hit pretty hard, and then it all mostly went away. So.
Well, I was going to say we can move somewhere warm and sunny where pay-per-views are free, but anyhow, we'll stick where we are for now. Let's get into this here fight card. Early prelims. Start off with a very interesting, I like the leadoff fight, women's flyweight, Kay Hansen, Jasmine Jasudavicius. Do you like this matchup also?
Yeah, and I liked that you almost got how to say Jesuda Vicious correct.
She is Canadian. I should have got it right.
I mean, but that can't possibly be a Canadian last name.
No. Well, we have lots of Europeans here, so I'm sure that's where it's from. But she's from St. Catharines, which isn't too far from my here place. We should bring back Canadian trivia. I used to, because there's two Canadians on this card. I like to try to put Dan in the role of the ignorant American who knows nothing about Canada. He's his neighbor to the north, only a few hours away from you. Let's do some Canadian trivia. Dan, currency question. What is the smallest bill that you can get in Canada, even though no one uses cash anymore?
Yeah.
What denomination?
So the lowest denomination, I'm going to say one. You guys got to have a one, right? Or are you in the dollar coin system like Europe?
Yes, Dan. We have a dollar coin. It's called a loony because there's a picture of a loony on it. You know what a loony is?
It's a bird, right?
Yes, there you go.
Yeah, I did.
I'm one for two there.
I know what a loon is, but I didn't know whether or not you guys had moved to the dollar coin like Europe.
Okay, and we also have a $2 coin. Guess what we call that one?
Double loony?
A toonie, Dan. Oh, it's called a toonie.
Loonies and toonies.
Yes, and then it goes to $5. $5 and it's all colored. $5 is a blue colored bill.
I feel like you wouldn't be good enough to make this up, so I'm going to trust you on this.
It is true. It's true.
Loonies
and toonies. But like I said, I can't remember the last time I used cash, really. It's been, well, I guess I never go out because we're always locked down. But other than that, yes, no cash. But so Dan did he did bad, actually. He just knows what a loon is, which is impressive. But other than that, all right. Interesting matchup between these two fighters. Let's break down the Canadian first. Jasmine Jesuda Vicious, 6-1, 2 knockouts, 1 submission, never been finished in a fight. She's Canadian, it says here in my records. This will be her UFC debut after winning her way in on the this past year, or I guess it will be last year technically now, to 2011's Dana White Contender Series. She's won 2 straight fights. She used to fight at strawweight. This one is up at flyweight. She's 5 inches taller than Kay Hansen and has 5 inches of reach on her, so quite substantial there. She's the more active striker of the two women, but hers is based off of one UFC fight, and Hansen's only fought twice in the UFC, so small sample size. She's at plus 185. And for people who don't know about the stats, more active striker basically means what it says. She lands more strikes on average in a fight than her opponent does. Her opponent in this case would be Kay Hansen, 7-4, 2 knockouts, 4 submissions, 1-1 in the UFC, won her debut, lost her last fight. She's been on the shelf since November of 2020 for various issues. She was an Invicta where she went 5-3. So basically all of her experience is in high level MMA here. So 5-3 Invicta plus she got a win in one of their tournaments too, which only counts as the exhibition fight though. She also used to fight at strawweight. She was 1-4 as a pro boxer, so wisely made the move to MMA. She's 10 years younger than Jesuda Vicious, despite having all this top-level experience. Striking stats in her favor, but like I said, small sample size. Striking stats meaning I compare, like for the newbies listening in, I compare their striking accuracy, their striking defense percentages, how many strikes they land per minute, and how many strikes they absorb per minute. I compare the two, and she wins more categories than Jesuda Vicious does. So you know when I mention that going forward. But like I said, we're talking about one fight for Jesuda Vicious and only 2 for Hansen. So this is a very small sample size. Minus 240 for Kay Hansen after that very wordy, long-winded write-up there. Dan, I'll let you pick first since you are the associate co-host.
I'm going to go with Kay Hansen on this one. I'm going to go chalk to kick off the show. I like Jasmine Jesuda Vicious. I think her reach presents kind of an interesting challenge here for Kay Hansen because this is Kay Hansen's first time coming up to flyweight in the UFC. So coming up in weight, I think first of all, maybe not the worst idea for her because she is very physically strong and she was probably draining herself a little bit. And she did fade at the end of that Corey McKenna fight. So I think it's not the worst idea to come up in weight. The reach is going to be a problem, but I actually don't think Jasmine Jesuda Vicious uses her reach to its advantage. And what Jesuda Vicious really does best is grapple. Like, that's how she got her contract on the Contender Series. Like, lots of takedowns, good top pressure. I don't think she'll be able to do that against Hansen, especially with Hansen being so much shorter. I also think Hansen's going to be stronger. So, yeah, I think Hansen's going to land a ton of takedowns here and probably grind out a decision.
Yeah, I like Hansen in this one, too. Well, 10 years younger is a very substantial age gap, but she's far more experienced than Jacinta Vicious under the bright lights. Probably going up in weight probably is a good thing for her. She's gone public that she's struggled with eating disorder, so I'm sure not having to diet and cut as much weight probably is better for her mental state. But also, I think she'll be, like you said, strong enough grappler that she'll be able to handle herself at this weight. I'm never a fan of minus 240 lines, but I will take this regardless. So Dan and I are both going with the chalk in this one. All right, so that's our first Dana White. How many contender series debutantes do we have? Three?
Five, four? I think. Five.
Wow.
Yeah,
really?
Kay Hansen, Gennaro Valdez, Simon Oliveira, Jack Della. Oh, yeah, not Kay Hansen, sorry. Jasmine Jesuita Vicious, Gennaro Valdez, Simon Oliveira, Jack Della Maddalena, yep, and Michael Morales are all contender series guys making their debuts.
Correct. And then we also have some other people making debuts also. So this is a very, you usually don't see, like I mentioned this a few episodes back, you don't usually see this on pay-per-view. This is more of a fight night thing where you have new people debuting. So other than the short notice people debuting, UFC must be high on these people that they're throwing on this card. All right, moving on. Gennaro Valdez, Dan just mentioned him. He's fighting next. Lightweights against Matt Frivola. Frivola would be the steamroller, Frivola, and Valdez would be Rayadito, which I think is a bird. I think
it's a very, yeah, it's a little small bird. Yeah.
Yeah. It translates to striped, but I think it's like a striped bird or whatever is what it actually is. Not really a fearsome nickname, is it?
No, definitely bird. Not when you look it up too.
No, it's a little striped bird. It's not even a big scary bird. All right. Let's tell you about Valdez. His record's scary. His nickname may not be, but his record's scary. 10-0, 7 knockouts, 3 submissions. So everything is a finish. This will be his UFC debut after winning his way in on the Contender Series via TKO. He's got an inch of reach on Frivola. He's twice more active striking, but once again, small sample size we're talking here. And he also has the grappling stats. For grappling stats, I use takedowns landed on average, takedown accuracy percentage, takedown defense percentage, so stuffing takedowns, and then submission attempts. So he wins in those categories against Frivola, but we're talking small sample. He's at plus 155. The steamroller, Frivola, 8-3-1, 1 knockout, 3 submissions. He's been knocked out himself twice. He is 2-3-1 in the UFC. He's lost 2 straight, last fight via knockout. He also was on the Contender Series where he went 1-0. He's also missed weight in the past, something of note here. He's was 1-0 in World Series of Fighting as well before that turned into PFL, minus 195. I'm going to take my first dog of the day. I think I like Valdez in this matchup against Frivola. Frivola's average at best. Valdez has proven to be more than that. His resume is pretty decent when you look at some of the opponents he's fought. And he obviously looked good in the Contender Series. He's got himself a contract. And he's a finisher. So I will take Valdez at plus 155 all day.
I'm also going to take Valdez in this fight. I will say this. I don't think he looked good on the Contender Series, for the record.
He looked good enough to get a contract. See, I don't remember things. Remember?
He fought maybe the worst guy that was on the Contender Series this whole season in Patrick White. Like a guy who did not belong on the Contender Series. I questioned why they were giving him a fight on the Contender Series because he was, I mean, like a sloppy striker. He came from Alaskan FC, which is generally like not a great regional promotion. And Gennaro like went in there and like traded with him and like kind of got tagged a bunch of times and just looked awful. And I remember thinking he's not going to get a contract, but he really deserves one because the problem is he went in there and fought like a wild and crazy fight because he thought that that's what Dana wanted to see. And maybe he got it right. But if you look at every single one of his other fights, he is a relentless grappler. He has great takedowns. And you can see his fights, you know, you mentioned high level of competition. He fought in Lux, which is a really good promotion. He fought some really good competition in Lux, hit a bunch of takedowns, mean top control. And like, not for anything, Frivola is a guy who, when you face him with that kind of approach, tires really quickly, whether he's offensively or defensively grappling. We saw it in his fight with Luis Pena, where he won that fight by split decision, but he really tired after grappling for a while, so much so that Luis Pena hit a takedown. So, and then we said Armin Sakurian really take it to him. I think Gennaro Valdez has got the right kind of approach to be the guy to take out a guy like Matt Frivola, who, you know, tires easy, and when he is tired, has suspect takedown defense.
Are you saying he's going to steamroller the steamroller? I mean, steamroller is what I meant to say.
I don't think he's going to steamroll him. You know, like, I think this is going to be a grind and maybe not even a super fun fight to watch. But I think it will put Valdez on the map of being like, oh, he wasn't that terrible guy we saw in Contender Series.
Did you used to do steamrollers to your brothers or your friends, or maybe even now to your children, where you roll over top of the person and say steamroller?
I'd never even heard of that until you just said
it. You young people, I'll blame the millennial thing. Going back to the Contender Series, you actually mentioned something I was going to bring up. Do a lot of guys and gals change their fight style?
100%
on Contender Series, because Dana doesn't have very good taste in fights.
Yeah, I think
wants mayhem.
I think Gennaro Valdez is a perfect example of that.
Right.
You see it a little bit with one of the next ones we're going to talk about with Simon Oliveira, but like, I think for the most part, fighters fight the way that they would fight anyway, and do the right thing. But I definitely think you can point to specific examples and be like, man, that guy did not do what he usually does. And Valdez is a perfect example of that.
Hopefully he comes out looking sharper in his UFC debut. All right, moving on. This is the fight. We went through the whole breaking down process of this fight, I think, right? Women's strawweight. Savannah Gomez-Juarez versus Vanessa Demopoulos. I believe we broke that down a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah, we can do the quick version if you want.
We can, for sure. Did you know that Juarez is La Malvada, which means the wicked?
I did. I think we talked about that last time.
Do you know what Demopoulos' nickname is?
Little Monster.
Lil Monster. Come on. Like rappers. Little doesn't exist anymore. It's Lil. Do you know what her previous occupation was, Dan?
Yeah, she was a stripper.
I'm trying to make you blush. Yes, she was, Dan. And if I remember correctly, when she was on Top Turtle, she had a mouth of a stripper too.
I think she broke the Top Turtle record for F-bombs. Yes. Which
good
is
interview, but
pretty impressive. Yeah, she's a great interview. Like if you haven't gone back, go back and listen to that episode of Top Turtle. Like, she is worth listening to because she's quite funny.
Yep. All right, we'll break her down for the non-hardcores that didn't listen last time. Juarez, 10-3, 6 knockouts, 2 submissions. She's 0-1 the UFC. She lost via submission. 0-1 KSW. She used to fight at 135. She used to fight at 125. This one is down at one. This is strawweight, right?
This is down at strawweight.
Yeah. So she's down 2 weight classes. She's an inch taller than Demopoulos, and she's got six inches of reach on her, which is something to think of. Plus 125. Lil Monster, 6-4, 1 knockout, 3 submissions. Never been finished in a fight. 0-1 the UFC. She only won one of her last 4 fights. 0-1 the Contender Series. She was the LFA champ, so there's something positive. She used to fight up at flyweight, 4 years younger than Juarez. Striking stats in her favor, plus she's 4 times more active striking and grappling stats in her favor, but we're talking small samples again. Minus 139, and I believe we both picked Demopoulos last time.
Yeah, Silvana Gomez-Juarez just looked real bad grappling against Lupita Godinez. And granted, I think Godinez is better than Demopoulos. In fact, they even fought, and she proved that. But it was a lot closer in the grappling than I think people realize. And Demopoulos, you know, she looked bad in her debut, but some of that was that she went up in weight class to fight somebody tough in J.J. Aldrich. So, yeah, I got a lot of faith in her in this fight. I think there's a good chance she takes her down and subs her.
That was short notice, too, I think, was it not?
Both of them were. Yeah, both Demopoulos and Silvana Gomez-Juarez both fought on short notice. It's worth noting that Juarez was supposed to be on Contender Series, though. So, like, she wasn't, like, pure short notice. She was, like, in a training camp. She was cutting weight. That's why she could make the actual contracted weight, and Demopoulos had to fight up a weight class.
There you go. All right, main event of the prelims. Bantamweights. Tony Gravely, Simon Oliveira, which is another one of our Dana White Contender Series recent graduates. We'll break down him first. Oliveira, not the champ. 18-3, 5 knockouts, 11 submissions. Never been finished in a fight. This will be his big show debut. He was 1-0 in the Contender Series. He's won 5 straight fights. He has fought at 145, 155, 165, which is some kind of weird weight that he fought at in Brazil, I think. So he's fought at much heavier weights than the 135 he'll be fighting at this weekend. He's got 3 inches of reach on Gravely plus 195. Tony Gravely, 21-7, 9 knockouts, 3 submissions. He's been knocked out once, submitted 5 times. So we have a path to victory here for Oliveira, for sure. He's 2-2 in the UFC, won his last fight via TKO. He was 1-0 in the Contender Series. He was the CES champ, the KOTC champ, the Fight Lab champ, the PACF champ. So this man has a lot of belts in his collection. He also used to fight up a weight class at flyweight. He's an inch taller than Oliveira, more active striker, and better grappling stats, but is based off of one fight for Oliveira. Minus 250. Over to you, Mr. Vreeland.
No, I think it's your turn to pick first, my friend.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought I picked Demopolopolopoulos first. All right. I'm going chalk, even though I'm worried about the submission skills of Oliveira. I like Gravely. I'm picking Gravely in this one.
Yeah, I agree with you on this one. I'm going to take Gravely as well. Part of the reason I'm going to take Gravely, though, is, you know, you mentioned the submission offense being an issue, or the submission defense, rather, being an issue for Tony Gravely. But if you look at the type of people who have submitted him, like, I think it's a lot higher level of a grappler than Simon Oliveira is. Like, he got submitted by Brett Johns, Patchy Mick, who's a beast, Manny Bermudez, Mirab Dvalishvili. Actually, Dvalishvili didn't even finish him. He just took a decision. So, like, all of the guys are UFC level, or, like, I mean, Patchy Mix is, like, one of the best fighters in Bellator. So he's only been submitted by really high-level guys. In addition to that, like, he is coming off of a loss to Nate Maness, but, like, he had Maness virtually unconscious in that first round. I think he's kind of, like, the type of person who, if he does tire, he's susceptible to that. But, like, Simon Oliveira's got to make it so that he gets tired, and I don't know that he's got the game to do that. I think Gravely kind of controls where this fight goes, and I think he's a lot better on the feet, too. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Tony Gravely here as well.
We are on the same page again. All 4 fights on the early prelims were on the same page, but I think going forward, we're going to have at least 1 or 2 fights that we're going to differ on a bit here. Before we move into the prelims, let me tell you about Better Fantasy. The fantasy season may be over, but the action is still coming on the Better Fantasy app. Download their free-to-play app today to bet on player props for the NFL playoffs. You can also enter their player prop pools and score big when you win. We love Better Fantasy because we can win awesome prizes and even raise some money for charity along the way, too. It's totally free-to-play. You'll earn better credits by completing challenges and use them to place your bets. Better Fantasy is available worldwide in all of 50 states. Download the app today over at betterfantasy.com/SGPN. That's BETTOR fantasy.com/SGPN. All right, prelims. This may be one of the ones where we differ on. I'm not positive, though. Welterweights. Trevin Giles versus Michael Morales, which is another one of our Dana White Contender Series gentlemen. Morales, no nickname. Giles, nickname The Problem. His record is not a problem, though. He's 14-3, 6 knockouts, 5 submissions. All of his losses have come via finish. He's been knocked out once, subbed twice. 5-3 in the UFC. He got knocked out in his last fight. He used to fight at He used to fight at middleweight and light heavyweight. This is his first dip down at welterweight. Striking stats in his favor, but we're not much of a sample size for Morales. Plus 112 coming back on him. Morales 12-0, 9 knockouts, 1 submission. This will be his debut. 1-0 on the Contender Series. He was the EMMA champion. He's got 5 inches of reach on Giles, 7 years younger, more active striker, but once again, sample size minus 140. Now it's your turn.
So I'm going to take Michael Morales for like a bunch of reasons. First of all, he's probably on my list of 3 guys who I thought looked the most impressive on Dana White's Contender Series. He fought Nikolai Veritenikov, and if I remember correctly, that was the one pick I got wrong that week, is I picked Veritenikov to beat him. Because Veritenikov's got good takedowns and is a good boxer, and Morales just tripped him any way he wanted to, like judo-style takedowns. He double-legged him one time. His takedown offense looks so good against a guy who I had already thought of as kind of highly in terms of how good he grapples. So in all of that, like, I obviously really came out liking Morales. And then there's just so many problems with the problem here. Is Trevin Giles coming down in weight? I worry about a little bit. He wasn't the smallest middleweight, so for him to be cutting all of that weight, I'm worried about what it's going to do to his cardio, especially against a 22-year-old kid, giving up some reach in this game, this fight, and I'm not sure that he's going to stuff all of the takedowns he needs to. He's given up some takedowns in the past that make me question whether or not he'll be able to stuff somebody younger and more athletic like Michael Morales consistently. So I'm going with the young gun here.
And I'm going to roll the dice and go with the veteran, Trevin Giles. I like his size. I think he's going to be the better striker. And he has beaten grapple-heavy guys in the past before. So 75% takedown defense. He may get taken down, but I think he can do enough to win this fight. So let's roll the dice, get some plus money. I'll go with Trevin Giles. And there we go. We finally have disagreed with one another. Welterweights, another Dana White contender series. Jack Della Maddalena versus Pete Rodriguez. Or is it Podriguez? Is he from Brazil, Dan?
He is not. He's American.
Dang it. Anyhow, his nickname's Dead Game. This will be his short notice debut in the UFC, which is never a good sign for a guy to make the short notice debut. He's 4-0 as a pro, with all four of his fights coming via knockout. Plus 260. I have no other info on him. Anything else you want to fill in the blanks with on him? Do you know much about him?
I mean, all of his wins are in less than half a round, and all for Icon Fighting Championship, which is, It does run on Fight Pass. So it is pretty easy to check back and look at some of his fights.
Does he look good? Have you seen his fights?
I will say this. He looks really powerful. He looks like he hits like a truck. He also looks like his hands never retract to his face and chin to protect himself on counters.
Yeah, perfect.
Which is a real big problem when you're fighting Jack Della Maddalena.
Yes. Let me tell you about Della Maddalena. 10-2, 8 knockouts, 1 submission. He's an Aussie. This will be his UFC debut. He was 1-0 in the contender series. He's won 10 straight fights. He also was MMA champ. He's got 2 inches height on Rodriguez. I'll call him anyhow. -3. Minus 350. I'm going Della Maddalena, obviously, in this one.
Yeah, he's, you know, I just mentioned there were 3 guys on the contender series that I thought looked much better than everybody else. It was Michael Morales, Jack Della Maddalena, and Jelton Jr., or Jelton Almeida, depending on what you call it. Those are like my 3 big takeaways. And he'll be debuting, I think, the first or second week of February. So we'll get to see them all in pretty short order. But Jack Della Maddalena went to absolute war with Angelusa, who I think is actually a more technical and better striker than Pete Rodriguez. And he clearly won the fight. He looked like he hit harder. He looked like he hit smarter. His footwork was better. I think Pete Rodriguez is going to come in there trying to throw like big one punch bombs and just going to get countered in the worst way possible. I like Jack Della Maddalena a lot in this fight.
As do I, as you'll probably hear later on when we make some more picks. All right. Featherweights, Ilia Topuria versus Charles Jourdain. Topuria, El Matador Jourdain is Air Jourdain, and he is Canadian. Do I have other Canadian trivia? Nah, I've given you enough Canadian trivia. Let's just hit this one. He is taking this one on short notice as well. Back-to-back short notice fights here on this card. He's 12-4-1, 8 knockouts, 3 submissions, 3-4-1 in the UFC. He's on win-loss-win over his last 3 fights. Used to fight at lightweight. This one's up at welterweight, right? Or is it down?
This is down
featherweight.
This is down at featherweight.
Yes, yep. Featherweight. I get the weight class mixed up sometimes. So yes, this is down at featherweight. He was a TKO champ up here in Canada. 2 inches of height over Topuria. He's twice more active striker, plus 410. El Matador, Topuria, 11-0, 3 knockouts, 7 submissions, 3-0 in the UFC. He's won 2 straight fights via knockout. Used to fight at a bantamweight. He was missing weight there, so now he's up at featherweight. He was the MFE champ, whatever that is. He's 2 years younger than Jourdain. Grappling stats in his favor, minus 600. I guess he'll be taking minus 600. Don't like the number, but I like the fighter.
Yeah, he's going to hurt Jourdain. I think for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think he's a better striker than Jourdain. Jourdain's getting a short training camp here. And also, I think people forget how good Ilia Topuria is on the ground, too. He's coming off those back-to-back knockouts, the one of Ryan Hall where he wouldn't engage on the ground, and the one against Damon Jackson where he never needed to go to the ground. But before that, he showed some really high-level grappling skills against Yusuf Zalal, which, I mean, like, Charles Jourdain, not known for his grappling. I think Topuria probably plays with him a little bit on the feet first, but if it goes badly for him, he's got that as a backup plan. He should win this pretty easily.
There's her pick. We're back on track again with our picks matching up. Let's go to the main event of the prelims. Raoni, because he's Brazilian. Not Raoni. We'll call him Raoni. Barcelos versus Victor Henry. Henry is the mangosta, which means the mongoose. Have we broken down him before? Did he pull out of a fight last minute?
I mean, these two were scheduled to fight a month
right.
ago.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
And then also 2 months ago, I think.
Yeah, it's true. So he's making his long awaited UFC debut, Mr. Henry. He's 21-5, 6 knockouts, 8 submissions, never been finished in a fight. He's on win, loss, win over his last 3 fights. Last fight being his submission win for him. He was the LOXF champ, the deep champ, and the CS champ. He made his debut way back in 2010. He's got an inch of reach on Barcelos. +340 coming back on him. Barcelos 16-2, 8 knockouts, 2 submissions, 5-1 in the UFC. One is for first 5 and then lost his last one. He used to fight up at featherweight. He was the RFA champ, the Shudo champ. He's also a BJJ champ and a wrestling champ. -475. Over to you.
Yeah, I'm going to take Barcelos in this. I like Victor Henry. I'm glad the UFC signed him. He's kind of a guy who's been waiting on the opportunity and really deserves it. He trains with Josh Barnett. He's like a catch wrestler type. The problem is I think he's just a little too wild for Barcelos. It's kind of the Pete Rodriguez, Madalena thing, only at like a much higher level. Victor Henry is a lot better than Pete Rodriguez, but I think he's going to go in with that wild game plan. And it's just, he's not going to be able to draw Barcelos into that fight and is going to wind up getting countered too much. And some of those counters might be takedowns. Barcelos catches a lot of kicks, turns those into takedowns. I think that's probably what he'll do here against Victor Henry, and he'll probably win him the fight just that way. So remember, this is a guy who took down Said Nurmagomedov a bunch of times, who we're going to talk about a little bit later in the show, and won that fight. So I think he should be able to do the same to Victor Henry.
There you go. That wraps up the prelims. We'll move on to the main card, but first let me tell you about the good people over at So Bet. Since when did sports betting become so rigid? Sports betting is meant to be social. When I picture betting, I picture bootleggers with mustaches tossing bets around in a speakeasy. So Bet has taken the social lineage of betting and putting a modern twist on it by providing a modern platform. So Bet is changing the game with their new product. Head over to SoBet.io and create an account to see for yourself. Through their fully functioning and free web application, you can access the demo of their app, which will launch next fall. The app includes consensus lines from Vegas, a feed of what other people are betting on, and the ability to send friendly wagers to anyone you know via text, QR codes, and links, among other methods. No money is transacted on the app, and it is purely competitive. Next time you're with your friends watching sports, turn the dial up a notch. Go to SoBet.io and see who can hit the most ridiculous bets. Users have the ability to place bets off Vegas odds or generate a bet by changing any metric they want, as long as somebody is on the other side to accept. Let's get back to the roots of betting with SoBet. Go to SoBet.io/SGPN. That's SOBET.io/SGPN today to join the revolution. And speaking of SGPN, make sure you download our app. We are live in the App Store and Google Play. Gives you easy access to all our picks, all our podcasts, all the contests. The bosses are always giving money away to you, the gens listening. So make sure you grab the app so you can get in on all the fun. Toss us an app review, assuming it's a good review, that is. And make sure you download the app today. All right. Main card. Doesn't really seem like a main card until we hit the top two fights. But anyhow, we start with middleweights. Rodolfo, another R that turns into an H. Rodolfo Vieira versus Wellington Turman is our first card of the main card, middleweights. Vieira is the black belt hunter. Turman is the prodigy. He's 25, I think, so he can still be the prodigy. When does that end, do you think? What age does the prodigy end?
I mean, BJ Penn is like, what, 40-something and running for governor of Hawaii with
is pretty, he for real?
Yeah, it's not pretty. Try not to look at any of the posts.
Okay, I won't.
It's maybe not as bad as Tito, but it's close.
it seems to be the thing in MMA. But anyhow, all right, Turman, you're allowed to be the prodigy still. He is 17-5, 4 knockouts, 7 submissions. He's been knocked out himself twice. Never been subbed in fight. I'm mentioning that because he's going up against a guy who subs everyone. He's 2-3 in the UFC. Won his last fight. He used to fight at welterweight. This one is up weight class at middleweight. 7 years younger than Vieira. More active striker. Plus 185. Vieira, the black belt hunter, 8-1, 1 knockout, 7 submissions, 3-1 in the UFC. Won his last fight via submission, of course. He used to fight at light heavyweight. He's got multiple BJJ championships of the highest level of BJJ championships. He's got an inch of reach on Turman. Grappling stats in his favor, minus 240. Despite how bad he looked in the one in the loss column, I will be going with Vieira here. I think he matched up well with Turman. I'll take the two, minus 240.
Yeah, and I think it's nice that we got to see him one more time after that loss, because that loss to Anthony Hernandez, you're right, was alarming, because basically he grappled with Anthony Hernandez and gassed himself out because he was punching and looking for chokes, and Hernandez has got a great gas tank. And what wound up happening was they got back to their feet. Hernandez, by some miracle, got up, and good on him. In Vieira just looked cooked. And then in the fight with Dustin Stoltzfus, who, granted, is a step down from Anthony Hernandez, you could see he worked on his hands. He worked on his cardio. He worked on staying composed so that he didn't tire out. And he picked up a third round submission. So a lot of those worries I had after the Anthony Hernandez fight are gone. And with that being said, I actually think he's going to be the first one to submit Wellington Turman, because while Turman is good, he is going to engage in that type of fight. I think he believes that he's as good of a grappler as Rodolfo Vieira. In all black belts are not created equal. It's really important that people know that out there. Just because they're both Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belts does not mean they're both the same level black belt, because Rodolfo Vieira is a guy who has won Abu Dhabi's, which is, there's only a small handful of people who have ever done that. And he's one of them. So yeah, he's a legend of the sport when it comes to jiu-jitsu. I think here he takes him down, deals with him. And you know what? I think he stays safe enough on the feet too, that he could win there as well.
Yes. He won ADCC submission world championships. He won 5 US world champion or 5 world championships that were in the world US. You won a whole bunch of world cups. Yeah. It's there's levels, as Dan said. So Vieira is both of our picks here. So what is only one so far that we're differing on? Interesting. I think we're going to differ here again, Dan. Here we go. Bantamweights. I know this because I read Dan's stuff that he writes on my website, manifesto.com. Bantamweights, Cody Stamann versus Syed Nurmagomedov. How do you say that last name, Dan? Nurmagomedov. How do you say it?
Yeah, I think so.
Is he? I know they're all Khabib's cousin. Is he the one who's his actual cousin, though?
He's not blood related to him in any way.
Okay. All right. There you go. And he doesn't fight like he's blood related to him as well. All right. Let's break it down. We'll go Mr. Wonderful first. Do you know Cody Stamann's Mr. Wonderful? He's also Spartan. He's 19-4-1, 6 knockouts, 2 submissions. He's 5-3-1 in the UFC. He's lost his last 2 fights. Over his last 4, he's gone 1-2-1, the one being a draw there. He used to fight up at featherweight. That's where a lot of his most recent fights was at. MFL champ, whatever that is. TXC champ, don't know that one either. He was 0-1 as a pro boxer. Grappling stats in his favor, which shows you that we're not talking about a blood relative here. Plus 160. Nurmagomedov. Syed, 14-2. 4 knockouts, 3 submissions. Never been finished in a fight. 3-1 in the UFC. Won his last fight via knockout. That was back in October of 2020. He was the AFC champion. He used to fight at flyweight. So these guys are coming from different ends of the weight spectrum. Despite that, he is 2 inches taller than Stamann, 6 inches of reach on him, 3 years younger, striking and active striking stats in his favor, minus 200. He is going to be my pick. The size, the youth, better striker, and I think he's beaten grapple-heavy people before, and I think he'll be strong enough to keep Stamann off, so I will take minus 200 on the Nurmagomedov guy.
I mean, so here's what I'll say. I you're right. I am going with Cody Stamann. You read my sheet, but like, what grapple heavy guy has he beat in the past? Justin Scoggins? Right, like that.
Well, he's technically, is he not grapple heavy, Dan?
He is grapple heavy, but you remember too that Saeed Nurmagomedov won a split decision over Justin.
Oh, that's
Scoggins.
How you say his name. Okay.
Yeah, Justin Scoggins.
And if Ricardo you look at Ramos,
he's not grapple heavy.
Yeah, he is.
He's won two fights by spinning back elbow. Like,
but he lands like three takedowns a fight though. So
he's got some grapple. But so the grappling heavy guys he's fought, in my opinion, are Rayony Barcelos and Magomed Bibulatov, both of which were his last two losses, both which took him down seemingly at will. Both of those guys grinded him out when they needed to. So, you know, like, don't get me wrong, he is much better on the feet. I clearly give Nurmagomedov the advantage on the feet. I think if Cody Stamann can't get him down, which there's a possibility he can't get him down, I think Saeed wins this fight pretty easily. But I will say this, at plus 160, I really think it's worth playing Cody Stamann and saying he can be the spoiler here. Because here's the thing. Cody Stamann has grinded out better people than Saeed Nurmagomedov. You know, granted, that fight with Song Yadong goes down as a draw. But, like, look up MMA decisions. By all accounts, he had won that fight. He grinded out Brian Caraway, who's an incredible wrestler. He grinded out Tom Dukinwan, send him into retirement. Like, this is a dude who has some like really high quality grappling and is only mostly lost to people like Aljamain Sterling or Merab Dvalishvili, who can out wrestle him. And I don't think Saeed Nurmagomedov is that. So yeah, I'm going with the dog money here on Cody Stamann.
Yeah. I don't like the way his career is looking at this point. And anyhow, we'll see what happens on Saturday, Dan. I like how you say Nurmagomedov, like you've said that name before. It's good. you know Saeed, do you? You're familiar with him a lot?
I'm familiar with his work, yes.
Okay. Let's go to welterweights. Michel Pereira, we are familiar with him too, versus Andre Fialo. Do we know him, Dan? I don't think I know him. I know him from Bellator, I guess. He's from Bellator and PFL.
He's a newcomer to the UFC, but I do know quite a bit about him.
Another short notice debut. Fialo, 14-3, 11 knockouts, one submission. He's been knocked out himself twice. Like I said, short notice debut. He's won four straight fights, so all via finish. That's how you get yourself in the UFC. He was 1-0 with one no contest in PFL. He went 4-1 in Bellator. He's got an inch of reach on Pereira, plus 230. Pereira's, whose nickname is Demolidor, which means demolisher, which is how he used to fight. We'll have to see if he still fights like that. He didn't last fight. 26-11, two no contests, 10 knockouts, seven submissions, 4-2 in the UFC. He's won three straight fights. He has missed weight in the past. He used to fight up at middleweight as well. This one is down at welterweight. He was the SBC champ. Got an inch of height on Fialo, minus 300. And it's your turn.
Yeah, I'm taking Pereira. This is kind of maybe the theme of this whole card is that once in a while, there's a guy who's got power. And it seems like that person, you know, like if you went down, you know, I said Pete Rodriguez has got power, but Jack Madalena is going to counter it and stay away from it. And you know, like who is the other? Oh, Victor Henry's got it and Barcelos is going to avoid it. I'm going to say the same thing here about Pereira. Like Fialo's got the power. I think Pereira is the craftier striker. I also think people are underestimating how good of a grappler Michel Pereira is because he doesn't that often right. And we want him to do a moonsault off the cage. But instead, like he took down and dominated Chaos Williams. I think he could do that here against Fialo. Yes, he is a giant question mark. And granted, when I do my recommended plays at the end, I'm not going to pick him for that reason because he's liable to like do a backflip and hurt himself in the process. But I think he has gotten to be a much smarter fighter, and I like Pereira for that reason.
Is it legal to do a moonsault off the cage? Probably not, right?
He got in trouble for doing, I can't remember. It was It was outside of the UFC where he got in trouble for doing some sort of weird flip off the cage or something like that. But yeah, I'm not kidding when I say a moonsault. He backed up and did like a backflip over some guy in the middle of a fight. And I want to say it was over in Japan somewhere, but now I can't remember exactly. Like he has done some crazy shit. Look it up on YouTube. He the stuff he does in the UFC is mild.
Could he at least do a Vader bomb off the cage for me?
I would prefer a Vader bomb, but he didn't give me that.
All right. Now like we warned you, this doesn't really sound like a UFC pay-per-view main card, but We got a couple title fights we can break down here. The third time we're going to see this fight. The other one, a grudge match. So we'll start with the flyweights. The champ. Yeah, this man is the champ now. Brandon Moreno versus former champ, Davison Figueiredo. Figueiredo's one nickname is Daico. Do you know what that means? D-A-I-C-O. I couldn't find a meaning for that one.
I don't know that one, no. I know Deus Duguera, right?
Is Deus Duguera, God of War. And Figgy Smalls War, is yeah. also his nickname. he's got a lot of nicknames. He's 22-1, so he's got a lot of wins too. 22-1 as a pro, 9 knockouts, 8 submissions. 9-2-1 in the UFC. He lost via submission his last fight against the man he's facing this week. And that lost him his belt. He's had trouble with weight cutting and getting down to flyweight in the past. So that's something to keep in notice of. You may want to wait till weigh-ins Friday morning if you want to bet this fight. He's at plus 142. Moreno's nickname's the assassin, baby. And it's 19-5-2, 3 knockouts, 11 submissions. Never been finished in a fight. 7-2-2 in the UFC. Won his last fight via submission, which was the aforementioned title fight where he got himself the belt. He just got a Lego belt given to him. Did you see that too, Dan?
I did see that. Yeah.
He totally should release that. I would love to get that set and build that big honking UFC belt. That would be very nice. He was 0-1 on the Ultimate Fighter. He lost to Alexandra Pantoje. That's a pretty rough first round fight in the Ultimate Fighter house, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it was, if I'm remembering correctly, that season was they ranked the fighters 1 through 16 yep. and did like a bracket style tournament, and Pantoja yep. was the one seed and Moreno yep. was the 16.
Yep. Very true. Very true. Little did they know that he's a future champ. He was the LFA champ, WFF champ, got 2 inches higher than Figueiredo, 2 inches of reach, 6 years younger, striking and active striking stats in his favor, minus 180. Is it my turn now? I forgot already.
It's up to you. I can go now.
No, I want to go. Moreno.
I'm going Moreno's with Moreno. I'm going Moreno as well. I like Moreno in this one because I think, I'll just be honest, I think what we saw in the second fight between these two is where they're both at in their career. Whereas like Moreno figured out how to be really strong in the beginning of fights after having a full camp, because the first time they fought, it was on like 4 weeks notice and they had just fought somebody else. Moreno had just fought Brandon Royval. So I think that first fight was not a good indicator of where they were at. And Moreno came out flat. In the second fight, he came out as strong as he typically does and beat the hell out of Figueiredo. And the other thing is Figueiredo gets worse as the fight goes on. So right. if Moreno comes out decent and just enough to like stall Figueiredo and wear him out a little bit, I think he wins this fight pretty easily more and more as the rounds go on.
And very Rosnam and Yunus obviously is a very recent example. Very rarely do you see people win their belts back from the person they just lost, especially in immediate rematches. So I like Moreno in this fight as well. Everything basically is in his favor here, and he seems like Dances seems to have figured this year game out, or at least figured out Davison Figueiredo for that matter. Is he the only UFC champ who's been cut before? And this just came into my head. I wonder if there's anybody else who was cut from the UFC before and went on to become champion. No one comes to mind.
Yeah, nobody on the top of my head, but that is that's an interesting one, especially because the reason was just wild. You know, they're just pretending that division didn't exist.
Yep, and now it's, well, I guess it's as good as it's ever been. So, because it always was good, regardless. All right, main event. I wanted to pick first last time because I want to hear your pick first in this one. Even I know who I'm picking though. Heavyweights, Francis Ngannou versus former teammate Cyril Gane. Gane. It could be any of those if you want. He's French. I'm sure it's not Gane. I'm sure it's probably pronounced better than that. So lo and behold, our champion is the underdog in this fight. Francis Ngannou, the predator, is the underdog. So we'll... So he's a predator. Gane is a bon gamin, which means good kid, right? I think. Bon gamin.
Yeah, it means like good boy, but it's like not as like patronizing as that sounds in the translation.
All right, actually, we'll break him down first, since he is technically the, even though he has a belt also, an interim belt, he's technically the challenger here. He's 10-0 as a pro, 4 knockouts, 3 submissions, 7-0 in the UFC. He was the TKO champ before all of this. He also was a professional Muay Thai fighter. He went 13-0, so he basically doesn't lose life. He's 4 years younger than Ngannou, striking stats in his favor, plus he's twice more active striking than Ngannou, minus 150 coming back on him. So you'd like, if you're picking a challenger, you would like to get plus money, but in championship fight, but you're not here, unfortunately. Ngannou, the Predator, 16-3, 12 knockouts, 4 submissions. So everything's a finish for him. He's never been finished himself in a fight. He's 11-2 in the UFC. He's won 5 straight, all via finish, obviously. Based on the last weigh-ins, he was 16 pounds heavier than Gain. He's got 2 inches reach, plus 120. Over to you.
Yeah, I'm taking Francis Ngannou in this fight. First of all, I think once you see this line, if you're betting on this fight, you have to go underdog or pass on it. That's just kind of how I feel about it. You can be confident in Ciryl Gane, or you can think Ciryl Gane's going to win, but like at the same time, paying that kind of favorite money on him just seems wrong, especially because, you know, like his path to victory is avoid the big blows from Francis Ngannou, which only one person has done to date. In the UFC is just one person with some phenomenal wrestling. And after that, Francis countered that with, I mean, like in that last fight, we saw the development of him as a defensive grappler, just absolutely stuffing Stipe Miocic and taking his back for a second, which was crazy. So I think we're seeing the technical developments of Francis Ngannou. He's not just a big power puncher. And so like seeing all of those technical developments just leads me to believe we've got a guy who's probably a little bit more technical and surreal, but like at the same time, Francis is going to be technical enough to get his hands on him a couple of times. And really it only takes getting his hands on him once. So I'm going with Francis Ngannou.
Only one person avoided Ngannou, Dan.
Are you sure about
that?
So nobody avoided anything in the Derek Lewis fight. I could have avoided everything that Francis Ngannou threw in that Derek Lewis fight, because it turns out neither of them threw any punches. It was for having maybe the two greatest power punchers in the history of the UFC. And I don't say those words lightly. They might be two of the best power punchers in the history of the UFC. It was the worst fight ever. And that is just such a wild concept.
Very, very true. I am going against you here. I understand what you say about the line, but I pick winners regardless. I would rather win minus 150 than lose a plus 120 bet. I think Gane is going to win this fight. I think he's got the strategy and the experience of avoiding people. And in Ghana, you never know. After that Lewis fight, you never know. I always have questions about his headspace and how he's going to approach a fight. So I like Gane's. I like Gane's ability to avoid being hit. He's far more active striking. I think he can get himself a decision victory, but it is a very dangerous game trying to avoid Francis Ngannou for 25 minutes. So that I will put out there. So there, we differed on a few there. That was nice, Dan. It's nice when we differ on things.
We wound up with 3 different. I had 2 dogs in those and you had 1. So yeah, I'd say we're right around the same lines on just about everything here.
It's good. It allows me to keep my lead over Dan. As long as I get a couple of wins on him a week, we're good. So, all right, let's do our, what do we call these again? Preferred picks, recommended.
Yeah.
Picks.
Preferred recommended picks, recommended plays, whatever you want to do. So we're keeping the $100 format here.
$100 format.
I'm going to start with, I'm going to stick with my game plan here. I'm going to start with $40 on Michael Morales. Okay. I'm really big on Michael Morales. I think especially with the line as low as it is on him, I think he handles Trevin Giles. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Michael Morales for $40.
Boy, and that's one I'm picking against you in, too. Very interesting. $20, Ciryl Gane via decision, plus 300. So I think if you're going to pick Ciryl Gane, like Dan and I were saying, the number we don't like the number coming. You're getting getting back just straight picking him to win and having him avoid Ngannou's power. So I think more than likely, if he's going to win, he'll win via decision. So I really like plus 300 coming back on that, but not enough to put a ton of money on. So $20 will give me a nice return if I hit that one.
All right, and I'm going to go, you're going to hate this because I'm going to go basically all the ones I have written down were ones I differed for you almost entirely.
You're going to get skunked.
So I'm also going to go $30 on Francis Ngannou just straight up. I just like the money line there. I like getting positive odds on a guy who I think is the best in the division.
All right, so Ngannou, what are we getting here for that? Plus 120. Okay, plus 120 for that. Interesting. I don't know why. There's no point putting the line down because you're going to lose it anyhow. So, but I'll put it down just in case something crazy happens. All right, $30. Rodolfo Vieira via submission over Wellington Turman. I'm picking Vieira to win, and that's pretty much his route to victory always. So plus 100, even money. I like to get a bit. I would have liked to get a bit better than that, but it's way better than the minus 240 on him. I say if you can pick Vieira to win, you may as well put him down winning via submission. That's quite a better line than minus 240. So let's put $30 on that.
And I'm going to close by doing 30 more on Tony Gravely, just straight up too. All my picks this week are going to be straight up ones. I think he's quite a bit better than Simon Oliveira. And as long as he doesn't tire out here, he should give you a pretty good return on that.
Right. So you're actually going to win one because I picked a Gravely too. So, all right, minus 250 on that. I didn't think I'd be into, I'm like not into props usually, but the past couple of weeks I have been. So go figure. The majority of my money, half of the $100, $50 is going on Jack Della Maddalena to win, minus 350. A high number, so that's why I'm putting a high amount of money on it, so I can get a fairly decent return. And I think he's going to win this fight over Rodriguez very easily, not least because his name's pronounced Rodriguez and not Rodriguez. So, all right, so that's our picks. I got $20, Cyril Gane winning via decision at plus 300. I got $30 on Rodolfo Vieira winning via submission plus 100 even money. And then I got $50 on Jack Della Maddalena to win at minus 350. So that's just an outright win. Dan, $40 on Michael Morales winning outright minus 140. $30 Francis Ngannou winning plus 120. And then $30 Tony Gravely winning minus 250. All right. Anything else for the MVP's most valuable props and parlays, Dan? Any other props, or you just want to go right to your monster parlay?
No, I think you sprinkled in some props there that you like. I think
you don't agree with any of them though, do you?
I like Rodolfo Vieira by decision. And I will say, yeah, if you're planning on playing Cyril Gane, that's how to play Cyril Gane. Yeah. Like I wouldn't bet him straight up right now. So yeah, I think you made a pretty smart play there. So
thank you.
For parlay, I'm gonna start with Rodolfo straight up because I like Rodolfo. I like Jack Della Maddalena, and I keep mentioning I really like Michael Morales. I'll throw him in there too. I mentioned that I like Tony Gravely straight up. We'll throw him in there, and we will, let's see, round it out with, oh, screw it. You know, let's just put all of my recommended plays in the same one too. I'll take Francis Ngannou. So all three of my recommended plays, add Rodolfo Vieira and one of your recommended plays, Jack Della Maddalena, and you're going to get 10 to 1. Actually, 10 and a half to 1.
Oh, even better. Even better. All right. So that puts a dough. See, end of the show. Jeff's bungling words. That puts a bow on UFC 270. Should be a fun fight card. We'll be back on Sunday to break it down and let you know how we did with our picks. In the meantime, you can listen to Dan's Top Turtle podcast, which just showed up in my feed. This week he has Brian Battle and Matt Frivola on it, correct?
That's correct. Yes.
Former Tough winner, Brian Battle, and Matt Steamroller Frivola, who we both just picked against, correct?
Yeah. Ouch.
Which
he is a really nice guy though. He's a great guy.
Hey, we're not picking who's a better person. We're picking who's a better fighter. So, all right. Listen, that prelim primer just showed up in my podcast Catcher 2, Dan. It's just nonstop Dan Vreeland in my feed. He's got Kurt Chase Patrick, who sometimes fills in on this podcast when I go AWOL. So, make sure you listen to that too and hear you guys make their picks for the prelims. Did KCP differ from your prelim picks much?
Yeah, he took, well, I won't spoil it, but
don't give it away.
differed with me on a couple of the contender series people. He had different reads on them than I did. So we wound up different on a couple of those.
Good. Very good. That's always makes things interesting. Read our stuff, sportsgamblingpodcast.com, MMA-manifesto.com. Follow us on Twitter. We are accepting hate and love, I think is how the line goes. Something like that. Hate mail and love. What is the line?
Love and hate mail.
Love and hate mail. Okay. At Jeff Fox Writer and Gumby Vreeland would be him. Or join our SGPN Slack and get in there. You can talk to us in there if you want. In the fights, actually anywhere on there, but especially in the fights channel. Always lots of fun in there talking about the fights. I think that is it. Let's let Dan take us home, unless he has something else he needs to say first.
No, you got it all. I'm Daniel right. Gumby Vreeland. He is the blonde fighter, Jeff Fox, and we will catch you on Sunday.